You're listening to the Build Assets Online Podcast. Learn how you can build a diverse and sustainable income online from two brothers who actually do it. Now, here are your hosts, Mike and Joe.
Joe and Mike, back again. BuildAssetsOnline.com. I messed up the screen multiple times. I'm showing you guys pictures of Wheaton Terriers.
What the hell?
Everything's broken.
The more we do this, the worse it gets.
Yeah. Anyway, Joe and Mike, BuildAssetsOnline.com, back at it again with the white vans. Let's talk about every single business that we've done online in our attempts to make money online that we failed at. And I gotta say, looking back at this list this morning, it's quite numerous. There's quite a few businesses that we've attempted and failed.
Yeah, Joe, it's been a lot. And this is honestly one of the things I look back on most fondly is our failed business models, because it's like, it's so innocent and it's pretty funny, like the things we've tried to do. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it really led to where we are now. But I think what's going to happen is we're going to go through these and we're going to start talking about them again. And then we're going to be like, all right, let's just do this again.
Well, I feel Waylon says, damn, Daniel. I love thinking about, like, I feel like old memes are better. But anyway, I feel that.
Boomer.
Yeah, you're right. As I'm looking through some of these, I feel like we have the wherewithal to execute them now the way that we didn't have before when we actually tried them.
Yeah, it's all about the wherewithal, you know, because realistically, I mean, people do such stupid businesses. People own like vacuum repair shops and, you know, like one horse towns and stuff.
Aren't those usually a front for something?
Huh?
Aren't those usually a front for something?
Well, in Breaking Bad it was, I guess, right? The guy was doing the fake identities and stuff. But yeah, like, you know, I wherever I drive, I'm always seeing businesses and I'm like, how does this even exist? How is this up and standing? And people are paying these bills. Like,
yeah. And Mike, I'm sure we're going to talk about this down the line. You recently turned me on to I forgot his name already. Even though I consumed
Michael Saylor?
Yeah, Michael Saylor, or is it Tim?
It's Michael Saylor.
Michael Saylor, the Bitcoin guy. And listening to him break down a good investment versus a bad investment, whether he's correct or not about Bitcoin mm-hmm. and stuff like that, really had me thinking about a good business versus a bad business. And there are so many bad businesses out there, unbelievably bad. And a lot of those businesses, I like them. Like, I think they're cool that they exist, but it's not going to be good for the owner. I'll just give you an example. There's this restaurant that we live, like there's this restaurant near where we live, like kind of like by the parkway, and it's always changing over to a new thing. And you know, like every couple years, it's like this bowls, and then it's like the next thing, and then it's like 10 million. It changes like once a year, and every one I'm like, oh wow, that's like pretty cool, like that's a cool idea, but I know it's gonna not stay open.
Yeah. And you know, whoever it's, I see things like that, and then whenever I see that new person come in, I'm like, why do they believe they can make it work? You know, everyone believes that they can make it work, but really I think the majority of successful businesses are built on the same foundation. And there's a reason why, as we go through this list, there isn't going to be any high-ticket dropshipping stores among them. It's because, like, literally every single high-ticket dropshipping store we've done has worked.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is I feel like our whole business, however long we've been doing this, I feel like we're very out of the loop when it comes to, like, acronyms and, like, all these business metrics. Obviously, because we didn't get like MBAs or anything like that. But I still feel that, you know, at least for me, and obviously for you too, there's always been an instinct there to like what a good business looks like and what a bad business looks like. And we can look at something. I guess we didn't know this at the time. I mean, probably we garnered this instinct from all of these failures that we're going to talk about. But, you know, for sure, just looking at a business and knowing like, all right, what's the average order value? How much do we stand to make per sale? You know, what's the amount of work involved per dollar? And I feel like we've never sat down and done like formal calculations on these things, but I feel like it's become instinctual after all these failures.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, a business comes down to mathematics and how much those mathematics are in your favor. So I guess without further ado, let's start talking about stuff before people get mad.
Yeah, sure. I thought it was going pretty interestingly, but whatever. We don't want to upset people. So,
oh yeah, I could BS about that all day. Let's go.
So the first thing I have on this list is something called SiteSwan. And basically what SiteSwan is, and I'm sure they still exist, you can check on that.
It's like an email from them, Joe.
Wow. Yeah, I feel like that's how it always stays fresh in my mind, because I'm always seeing emails from them in my personal inbox. I should probably unsubscribe. But the whole premise with SiteGround is they have all these
SiteSwan. SiteGround we use
a little bit, not really, but we have all these templated websites, and you can basically, you know, you have a local nail salon near you, you can throw up one of their templated websites and, you know, format it how the nail salon is, basically tell the nail salon, hey, I made you this free website. Like, you know, I'd love to take you on as a client. You know, what do you think? And then they would pay you like a monthly retainer to have the site open. And then you would list like things like their location and, you know, whatever this site template included. And, you know, I got to say at the time, this might be one of those where maybe we could have executed it well. I have no doubt that there are some people making good money doing stuff like this, you know, probably even good money with SiteSwan. But the amount of legwork required, I felt, was ridiculous. And maybe at the time we didn't have a good idea of how we can organize that workflow. But I just remember from the experiences we had, we actually did work with a nail salon, or like we didn't work with them, but they were the closest we got to a client. And the guy wanted me to like, I actually did go meet with him and like talk about it. And then he's got to talk about it with his, you know, I think his parents were like the owners. So he's got to talk about it with his parents. And I was like, man, if I got to do this for every client just to, you know, I forgot what the monthly profit would be, but even if it was $100 a month, if I got to do that every time, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. So essentially it's a $500 setup fee that you charge to the person, mm-hmm. to the, say the nail salon, and then they pay you $50 a month for hosting. So this is kind of like a done for you type way to resell websites. So yeah. Honestly, I think I found this on like Craigslist.
Yes. I think
I don't
you
know
did.
What I was. Yeah. But in any event, it wound up, we were like cold calling these businesses, and yeah, I think for $500, it's not that $500 is a good amount to make, and it's digital, and you know, that's profit. But really what you need to think about is how much it's going to take to acquire a customer. And really, that's not something we had any sort of gauge for when we were starting out doing anything. And so like, that's why I think when people go towards like the Amazon businesses first, they're able to have some initial success, and that's kind of a gateway to them to get into the game.
Yeah, the Amazon, I feel, sets an unrealistic expectation of customer acquisition, because the customers are already there. So you can get started on Amazon and think that, oh wow, it's so easy to sell online, or it's so easy to do anything digitally, but tis not the case.
Yeah, because you know, just starting out, you don't really know what it takes to sell someone. Where are you supposed to get, you know, people are foaming at the mouth to get you to you know, they give you an affiliate commission if you sell their product, but no one is here teaching you how to actually do marketing, how to do sales, how to actually close people. And so, Joe, you're distracting me with that strawberry. In any event, you could spend hours cold calling people, and how many is it going to take to get one person on board? If it takes you 10 hours to get one client and then you make $500, that's $50 an hour, right? Not bad, but it's a lot of work. And is that number even real? Are you willing to spend 10 hours cold calling people? Are you willing to spend 100 hours cold calling people? So, yeah, I think when you get yourself set up in that type of business, it can get discouraging. But Joe, I need to say, I'm looking at this website again, the SiteSwan website,
Let's do it.
and my
I'm
brain is
ready.
lighting up because listen to this. Listen to this. What if we took this concept, we scraped all the, salon owners, cafe owners, et cetera, send out a mailer. They could just go look up their domain, see the website we made them. If they want to move forward, they call us. If not, no harm, no foul. 50 cents a piece of mail. You send out 10,000 of those bad boys.
Let's run some calculations here, Mike. This is what we're talking about. This is where the wherewithal comes into play here, because previously we wouldn't have thought to do this.
Well, of course, yeah, we didn't know how to acquire traffic in this way, right? But it is just a matter of how many people can you make contact with, how many of them are going to say yes, and how many hours does it take of your time to reach X amount of people? And that's why paid advertising is so great if you can afford it, because it doesn't take up your time, right? There's an asymmetrical relationship. I could just hit one button, and now I can get, thousands and thousands of customers to my website with Google Ads. Granted, it takes some time to learn the platform and get good at it and stuff like that, but again, very, very asymmetrical. Because now I spend 1 hour a week on Google Ads, and however much traffic we get a month, I don't know. Tens of
Yeah.
hundreds of thousands across the board.
Yeah. My brain lit up for a second too when you said that, because I'm just curious to see if we could pull that off. But I think it's when we have nothing to do again, I feel like we gotta do something like that. Like something, I don't know, something new,
Yeah.
but something where we have good ideas on how to execute it.
I think that's a great idea, and I don't even want to talk more about it because I'm just gonna want to do it. And yeah, we probably shouldn't do it. Too much to
We
do.
might want to do it later. Okay.
But yeah, it would take, so if we sent out mail, right, it would take one out of every 1,000 people we mailed to break even. If we spend $500 on mail, that's 1,000 people, 1,000, letters. One goes on board, we make $500, and then we get the recurring revenue of what, $50 a month. So, I mean, again, if it's not taking up a lot of your time, then it's a good business model. But that you could say that about anything. That's why, like,
Yeah.
that's why the stock market works the way it does. Index funds, whatever. It's not like a great return day by day. But it takes up literally 0 hours, so it could have,
Yeah,
it could be good
we'd have to get a
after.
VA in place to handle the incoming calls too and what. That would be interesting to see if we could just totally outsource the whole thing.
We have VAs.
No, I know. I'm saying it would be interesting to
I could finagle this whole business operation right now.
see.
Get it all in place.
Maybe that's what we should spend the rest of the stream doing.
Nah, let's move on. Let's move on.
Right. So the next thing I have here, and we're going to run through a couple of these quick because they're all kind of similar. I want to say these have not been so much failures as they've been like we didn't really take them any further and they didn't make very much money. Well, but anyway, crossword puzzles, recipe books, and kids books. I feel like we've both tried iterations of these things when we first started doing Kindle publishing, just throwing out. I don't, didn't you do like some sort of? I forgot. You did like some sort of weird recipe book or some book about like.
Yeah, I did an Instant Pot.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, recipe books, kids books. I did some kids books, crossword puzzles, Sudoku. We've made a little bit of money doing these things, but not nearly enough to take it to a scale where we could make a living off of it.
Yeah, and that was on Amazon, right? So it wasn't like a total fall flat on our face type thing, but Yeah, it just wasn't able. We weren't able to execute it at the scale that we needed. And so a little bit better than the SiteSwan situation, because we were able to tap into Amazon. And so we were able to make sales, acquire some customers, but we didn't really, I guess, have the level of execution at the time to take it to where we needed to go. It was just, you know, a bunch of crappy recipe books, no pictures or anything, like crossword puzzles. And I think at the end of the day with that, you know, you don't make enough per sale to have a path forward.
You probably have to have legitimately thousands of recipe books out there. And that's just how you would make it work with something like that. And if you had that, honestly, that would probably be not bad. You just have so many seeds planted that, like, you know, you're going to get sales every month. Maybe you can make a couple $1,000s a month passive. But again, it's going to take a lot of execution to get all that published and a system, which we weren't good at the time.
Yeah, you would need a system of, you know, creating the recipe books and I think quality comes down, you know, is a factor as well. Like, you can make a recipe book for really cheap, because the thing is, like, you can't copyright a recipe, right? Yeah. So you could just literally, that was like the whole thing at the time we found out. You can't copyright a recipe, so you could literally just find recipes on the internet, compile them. Maybe you make a tweak here and there, whatever, and boom, you have a recipe book, albeit without pictures and, you know,
yeah,
whatever. But at the end of the day, I mean, people want to see pictures, people want high quality stuff. So I don't know. And on top of that, it was like, I made that recipe book, I like did it myself. You know, it took me hours to make that book, and, you know, I was like editing like little ingredients, because I was like scared of the copyright situation anyway. I didn't want to be, you know, blatantly copying anything. So again, too much of my time to make too little money.
Yeah.
Now, if we had, say, a VA, we made some sort of training process on how to create these books, you know, say, go here, go here, go here, go here. This is where you can find recipes. I want a bunch of kale recipes. So you scour the internet, you find a bunch of kale recipes, you combine them into a format, and then that's, you know, cover off Fiverr, upload it, you have a process down, then, yeah, I see Joe smiling. I see
that. I'm ready to do it.
But yeah, so maybe it costs you, you know, it takes up 3 hours of the VA's time to get 50 recipes compiled and formatted. That's $12. $5 for a cover, $17, $20 per book.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So.
No. I'm laughing for a different reason. I'm like, I hope people are enjoying this episode, because I'm enjoying talking about it. And I look over at the chat and Greg also says, how about dropshipping?
I guess we can get to.
Well, these are our best episodes that we do, but people hate them.
Oh, so. Yeah, they're the most fun for us, but, you know, people don't want to hear about this stuff.
But wait, I want to talk about, in that same vein, coloring books, because that was a bit of a different animal, if you will. Interested now, I'm talking about adult coloring books specifically. A bit of an interesting story how I got into doing that. This is when we were first just getting started selling on Amazon. CreateSpace at the time was the paperback publisher for Amazon. So you would go on CreateSpace and publish the book there. Now, I somehow learned about this. I don't know, someone I was randomly talking to on Skype. I don't know how I met her. Her name was Jill, but she was like, look, this guy has this course on the Warrior Forum about, and it's $27, about how to sell coloring books online, adult coloring books, and adult coloring books at the time were hot. They were...
I just pulled up the Google Trends.
They're back?
No. Okay, so I don't know if you can put this up on the screen.
Send it. Let's put it up.
I'm looking at 2004 to present. But yeah, so I mean, this is like really one of your first big wins on the internet, I'd say. Oh yeah. I mean, you had the FBA business going, which was like the arbitrage stuff. And so that was doing its thing. It was decent income. But this was like the first time there was a really asymmetrical time versus earnings type situation happening.
Oh yeah, hold on. I'm gonna get this in the screen here. And we'll describe it for those listening on the podcast. So if you see, this is a Google Trends, and around 2015 there was a huge spike in adult coloring books, and there was this course on the Warrior Forum on how to put them out on CreateSpace, and you know, people were, I feel like I put the most effort in to execute it. I could do it obviously much better now, but I had my wife drawing, like I had everything I can think about how to do. I was making like patterns on the computer, you know, anything I can think of to get coloring books out. And I only managed to get like 8 out, but I made like $15,000 in 1 month around this time. You can see on the Google Trends around 2015 when the adult coloring book thing just was through the roof.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was really a combination of right place, right time. Because, I mean, if you look at the trends, like that, people probably remember too, if they were, everyone was alive back then watching this. So it was all over the news. It was like a big thing, you know?
Yeah.
The coloring books. So, yeah, I mean, it just so happened that we were involved in the space enough. Like, you were on Amazon doing FBA. I was kind of trying to get my feet wet at the time with Kindle. And so, you know, you were involved enough and had just enough experience to be able to execute it. And I mean, it was a pretty simple thing. It's just pictures on a page.
Yeah, I was using like some automatic like pattern generators on my computer, making like, what is that? Why do I forget words sometimes? For fractal patterns from other images. Yep. So I was doing stuff like that, as well as, you know, having my wife draw and all those kind of things. Like you said, right place, right time. And those books still make me money today, actually. They're just sitting in my Amazon paperback account. And I think I still make $100, $200 a month off of them.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, nothing to sneeze at, right? So
probably the best ROI on anything I've ever done to this date, I would say.
maybe. But at the end of the day, you tried to like build out an email list, and, like do funnels for it and stuff. And then that's where we really, you know, started swimming with the sharks.
And, yeah. Yeah. So
we didn't really know what we were doing.
I tried to sell them digitally on my own website and create like a coloring book club. And it was profitable for a little bit. It was just, you know, it was working to some extent, but at the time I wasn't comfortable like spending so much money to get to acquire. I didn't really understand customer acquisition at that time. And I wasn't bold enough to spend enough money to do it and understand what I was doing.
Yeah, there was surely a way we could have executed on that and I think done well with it. But we didn't have that in us at the time. So what else we got on the table?
Okay. So we have, there was a gentleman named Luther Landros. Again, something else from the Warrior Forum. And I feel like we should talk about his sales funnel before we even talk about what we were supposed to do for whatever he was teaching, because
I think we should have Luther Landro on the show.
I would be 100% down for that.
I think I would say actually there's plenty of things we actually learned from Luther Landro and his copywriting and his sales stuff that we put into high ticket dropshipping.
Oh, 100%, 100%. I remember we were in your room at the time, and
yeah, I know.
we were watching his like sales, his virtual sales letter or whatever. And you gotta understand, his like webinar or virtual sales thing was all text, and the text would just show up on the screen, and it was the most persuasive thing that you can ever imagine seeing. And I remember freaking out and like, oh my God, we have to get this. Right. We did, like, at the time we were buying courses left and right at this time. And, you know, I think deep down inside we didn't want to buy another thing, but we were like, we got to buy this right now.
Yeah. His ability to hook you in with stuff. And so maybe let's give a little bit of background. So like back in the day, what you would do is you would go on the Warrior Forum, and there'd be a special place, like Warrior Plus, it was called, where people would just go and try to sell their stupid little courses. And so Luther was like really probably one of the top people on the Warrior Forum. And so, you know, you're looking at this forum of stuff, and he would just have some headline like, lazy schmuck makes $50,000 selling, you know, selling the dentist for 1 hour a week, or, you know, something like that. And of course, you have to click it, because really the mind state when you're beginning online marketing is you want to find the lowest hanging fruit. You want to, it's, I don't know how else to describe it, but you want to find the thing. You want to find the hidden underground thing that's going to make you rich instantly.
Exactly.
And always
100,000.
He was always so persuasive with making you believe that he had that down.
I just Googled him. Like, I just Googled his name, and the first thing comes up is Udemy. I don't know what if he's still putting out stuff, but I'm just looking at some of the name of some of his courses. The first one he has on Udemy is called The 20-Minute Workday.
Yeah.
So extremely powerful.
Yeah. So, oh my God. Oh, there. Okay. I'm trying to go on Warrior Plus and look at some stuff, but yeah. So we would always click on his things, and it would always be, yeah, like a video sales letter that was just text on video, you know,
mm-hmm.
But I remember being in my room and we're watching this thing, and it was like, you're sucked into this video for 20 minutes and you're like, oh my God, how much is this going to cost? And then he, you know, he does the whole thing and it's going to cost $27.
Full money back guarantee.
Yeah. I remember one time, like, we were just so enthralled with this presentation and he was getting to the price and he said $27 and we both just bursted out laughing. It's so ridiculous that he could offer so much value for only $27. But to cut to the chase, what you would get with these courses would just be like, hey, here's a WordPress theme. Here's how you find leads. Go call them. Go sell them on this thing. So once you got inside, it was super underwhelming, but because it required a lot of action. There was a lot of things that like were glossed over for the beginning marketer, yeah. Right? So kind of like the site swan thing, right? Like at the end of the day, okay, you make a sale, you get $500, $60 a month recurring. That's pretty good. But how do you go from point A to point B of acquiring the customer? And that's always where, you know, we would never be able to execute on his stuff. Because push would come to shove and be like, all right, it's time to find customers now. And how do you do it? How do you do it in a way that's worth your time?
Yeah.
You can never figure that out.
And I'm looking through like some of his Udemy stuff right now. It doesn't look like he's been active in anything from what I can see. But so he has a course from 2018 called How to Start a Video Marketing Agency with Adobe Spark. And
hey, I'm Luther.
Oops. I accidentally clicked it, but I can bet you that it's probably like a good idea, like a good concept. But again, it's probably not going to have all the little details that you need to make it work. And I guess that's probably why it's so cheap, because it's not like a full master plan, a full blueprint of what you need to do. A lot of, you know, it's got the business, but the business model is probably pretty cool. But at the same time, you need to understand a little bit more and becoming a little bit better at like systematizing.
I want to email him.
I don't know if you can get in touch with him.
I'm going to find it.
In any
event, we're going to do it. We're going to get him on the show because cut to the chase. He one time had a course like breaking down how he did his sales stuff. And of course I bought it. And a lot of what was in there, you know, he kind of opened the kimono as far as like,
woo.
Some of the tactics he would use for, you know, making persuasive sales copy and stuff like that. And at the time, a lot of it was over my head, but I really took it to heart and I used that when formulating like our email sequences for the high ticket dropshipping stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that like side by side with Klaviyo doing the email funnels. And I mean, to this day, we still really use a version of those emails. So, you know, everything that you do can serve you down the line if you choose to, you know, try and pick out the golden nuggets of whatever it is you're learning. And so, yeah, like it is good sometimes to fail because it gives you some sort of perspective and, again, gives you a little bit of insight. Every failure is like roots in the ground, because I think if you have a win too early, it's hard to maintain it because you don't know why you won. You don't know what you did right. The more you fail, the more you, you know, as Thomas Edison says, I found 10,000 ways not to make a light bulb. Right. So it's that type of idea.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, failure is one of the ingredients to success. And I don't know if that quote's by like Ben Franklin or Gary Vee. I don't know which one. Okay. T-shirts. Print on demand. You know, Mike, I've always wanted to make this model work.
I know.
And to this day, I want to make this model work just because I feel like there's unlimited potential with it. But at the end of the day, the amount you make per sale is low. The amount to acquire a customer is high. I feel that the process of making the shirts can be difficult to outsource. I know people that have done it at scale with Amazon merch pretty successfully over the long term just by throwing like thousands of shirts up. But again, we're talking Amazon, the customer is already there versus acquiring your own customers. But our own foray at selling t-shirts, we just converted it into a high ticket dropshipping store and we sold that store by now. The store's gone.
Yeah, I think the issue you get into with this type of thing is like graphic design. Yeah. I think design in general, because it's If you know how to craft like a perfect shirt, an amazing shirt, you know, whatever fashion, that's like a $1 billion industry. You know, you can become a gazillionaire just doing fashion.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a very particular thing, and I think it's very hard to make it work because you have to be able to capture a sentiment or, you know, play on your audience and design something good on top of having all like the good elements of marketing and customer acquisition, et cetera, to go along with it. So that one variable really just makes it hard. It's not like a commodity. It's not like a vanity. Someone needs a vanity. You know, you want a shirt. It has to be, you have to be drawn to it for a specific reason. So,
yeah, the way to do it, I think right now is on a big platform like Redbubble or one of those sites where you can just upload mad shirts and then just have it sit. And then, you know, the SEO is kind of in play. Like, they have the domain authority. They have the audience. So I think that's how you do it, but not really interested in doing that.
Yeah, it's a difficult one.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
All right, well.
What else we got?
Let's move on to FBA, because FBA is an elusive one. Now, I've had a lot of success doing different types of FBA, but there's a lot of FBA things that I failed at. Sorry, I was getting distracted by the chat. And also, on one hand, I hate FBA because I feel like there's a lot of risk in taking on a lot of products and then having everything in Amazon's ballpark. But on the other hand, FBA businesses seem to sell for a lot. I don't really understand.
FBA is one of the most sellable businesses in the game.
I don't understand why, but I feel, you know, for that reason, it piques my interest a little bit, but we failed
a lot. The reason is because you're building your own brand. If you built the same business off Amazon, the same type of business, selling the same thing, then that it would sell just as well. But the problem is, people buy stuff off Amazon, so you kind of have to play their game. And yeah, it comes with risk. You know, our good friend Braden was telling us a couple months back about some crazy FBA issues he was running into. You've experienced FBA issues, but yeah, I don't know. I think you need to have the particular set of cojones for that industry to deal with large amounts of inventory being held up or being screwed up or being misplaced. And, you know, maybe if we talk to an expert in depth about it, change my mind, but it is, it's certainly a risk.
Yeah. So one of the things we tried to sell was hoses, And we picked that product. We actually did this with someone else. We picked that product off of the criteria from a course. And, you know, what happened was by the time the hoses, we got them listed up, we took the photos. By the time all that happened, there was already a race to the bottom with like 50 other sellers.
I hate to say this, Joe, but I think we can do it in a better way. I think we can make FBA work. In this climate, I don't know, with all the shipping bullshit.
Yeah.
But in a regular climate where you're not, you know, paying $30,000 for a container or something.
Are we going to send out a mailer?
No, we wouldn't send out a mailer, but I think just, you know, the way people sell FBA courses and, you know, a lot of success stories you hear about FBA are with just stupid low ticket products. And yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of money to be made there because it's just how it is. You know, you look at Amazon's top charts and it's cheap stuff, but it's very competitive. So yeah. If you get in early, you could have success. If you start a new trend, you could have success. But at the end of the day, we got to stick to our fundamentals, Joe, of high ticket.
Yeah.
High ticket, long tail.
And I think I remember, so our friend that we were doing this with, he's a bit of like a, he's a bit crazy. And when we were doing this, he was like, why isn't this working? Like he was like obsessed. Now he's doing really great with crypto stuff, but he was like obsessed with trying to figure out why this hose situation wasn't working. So he'd be in like the FBA Facebook groups. He'd be like messaging every single person. And I remember one thing he stumbled across was someone told him that everyone says when you do FBA, go for something light, easy to ship, and that won't break. And he's like, I did the opposite. I went for something heavy that like has glass and that is hard to ship, but it was like a cigar humidor or something, like some sort of huge contraption. And so, yeah, that's stuff like that, I think, would be the angle that we would do it at.
Yeah, I think it just has to make sense that way. Because, I mean, we see it every day. We know how to market these bigger, expensive products. And you could just put – you could make your own website for them as well, use ads to drive traffic to them as well. We have the ability to make all of that work. But, yeah, the issue with Amazon is you run into – now you wind up competing with all the Chinese manufacturers that are just selling it on their own that have better margins than you.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah, I wouldn't try and be, like, number one in a huge category. I think it's just about, like you said, you know, some sort of high-ticket thing. You have enough money to do ads, say, on Amazon. You could do blogging, paid ads on your own website, etc. And that's how it has to be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what are some of the things you tried to sell on Amazon that didn't work out? FBA.
Stainless steel straws.
You're still using them.
They're great, but too cheap. Race to the bottom. I remember going to like the port to like pick up my box of straws.
Yeah, was it like crazy stuff going on down there at the port? Who knows what it's like now?
I was waiting for hours and I was in a room with like all these truck drivers. And like I guess they had all been there before and they all kind of like knew each other, I guess, in some regard. So I felt really out of place. And there was like arguments going on. Like my boss says I got to pick this up. And you're telling me like something. Like there was a lot going on like that. And I was just like, I was waiting for my straws.
Yeah. The lovely world of logistics.
Yeah. So that's all I have on the list. That's worth talking about.
Nice. Well, do we want to talk about the gum?
Yeah. I don't even know how to describe it other than that. There was a certain gum that I partnered with someone to sell on Amazon. And we tried to execute it in like a ClickFunnels style fashion. Where we're doing Facebook ads and we're saying like, look, if you have this condition, you know, this gum might work for your condition. And then I ended up getting like...
We were doing a little bit of Google ads as well.
Yeah. And it worked to some degree, but just not to the, you know, I felt like we didn't own the product at the end of the day, yet we were handling like the logistics of it, kind of. It was just a stupid partnership in some ways. I don't know.
Yeah, we were trying to sell gum through like ClickFunnels. We were upselling them with just like more gum.
Yeah.
But we did get some sales with that, but yeah, I don't know if it was profitable for those people. But all right. Let's get to some chats, shall we?
Yeah.
All right, you read. I don't feel like reading.
Okay. Great content, guys. Just bought your course and module 5.1. I sell gold names that are custom made to the name chosen. Does your Google ad strategy still apply, or should I go straight to the text ads? So does the shopping ad strategy still apply, or should you go straight to the text ads?
What does he mean by gold names?
It's like gold plated names, like Joseph, you know.
Yeah. Do you remember that one site we found from back in the day that was like a dropshipping site that was doing that? It was like marquee type names, just like letters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doing shopping ads with something like that, I wouldn't say would be out of the question, but I would need to be convinced of keyword volume, like any sort of demand. Like what would someone search? Gold plated name? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe if you have a better, if you're inside the course, then you can message us. I'm interested to like see more about the business. And yeah, if there's search volume for it that has buyer intent, you could do shopping ads, you could do text ads. But ideally for something like that, you should do both, because shopping ads, you can't really control that well, especially for like custom products. It's not that effective. But
Papoosh official. He says, hello, guys. Brazil in the air.
Os.
I do the same thing. Yeah. What?
I said, bom dia.
Waylon says, I do the same thing. There is an antique thrift shop not too far from me in a very non-commercial area. I have no idea how this shop has stayed open. Well, I feel like one thing about those kind of stores is they have like 100% margin and like zero inventory costs.
The antique shops? I think about those too. I mean, I was in, where was I? I think it was when I went to Maine last year. It was like, there were antique shops everywhere. And that's like all there was in some areas. And it's just filled with nonsense. So yeah, where are they getting these antiques? They have to pay someone for them. Who's buying them? I don't know, but I know Sal Volcano likes teaking, he calls it. So maybe there's an audience for it.
Oh, there definitely is an audience for it. I think that combined with the fact that the inventory probably costs next to nothing. I feel like your overhead is basically just the space. And if you're in a weird, you know, area, you're not in like a major shopping district or a shopping center or something, I feel like the rent can't be that expensive, you know?
Yeah. I always wonder about that commercial rent.
Yeah.
But
Waylon says, I like you guys talking about different topics. FWIW. What does that mean?
For what it's worth.
Okay. I never heard that one before.
Yeah.
Greg and Ascension says, that's a new world for me, but I love to explore these options when I get to a better place. I mean, everything we're talking about in this stream is...
Explore it.
Yeah, probably stuff you shouldn't explore. But
we've explored so much, and I think we've really chiseled it down to what you know, a beginner can really be effective with. And it is high ticket drop shipping, SEO, whether it's blogging, you know, affiliate, etc. Kindle publishing is great. So if you stick to any one of those, you will make money, most likely. Results are not guaranteed. But yeah, I mean, we see people with success every day in our course, in our membership, with those. So I would say just stick to them.
Waylon says, there is a dude who was made a website a year ago, and he was scraping Pinterest recipes and foregoing the backstory of the recipe and just listing the recipe.
I mean, that's value. That's real value right there. No one wants to sift through that shit. I would pay, you know, $2.99 just to have 50 recipes sifted through for me.
I mean... Okay, so like when you go to a recipe site, I feel like, yeah, it's like 1,000 words of like content, and like it takes so long to scroll down to the actual recipe. And yeah. But and the people who run these sites, I mean, obviously they spend a lot of time, and I'm not saying it's not valuable, but like they spend a lot of time like on the photos and on the just crafting the recipe and coming up with new ideas. I mean, you know, I guess respect to them in that regard. But yeah.
Yeah, so, but they're just doing it. They're just doing it for the bounce rate.
Yeah, and to get right. so you see more ads by the time you get to the bottom. But I mean, hey, that's how they make money. So at the same time, I don't know. It's just that's the way it is. But it's funny that guy did that. Okay, and yeah, you're right. It would be. It's almost like it's like ad block in a way or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Waylon says, I thought Luther Vandross was a singer. This is Luther Vandross.
Oh, Luther Landrow. Not Luther Vandross.
Yeah, Luther Landrow, yeah. Please suggest some payment gateway for a high-risk model.
What?
I don't know what that means. High-risk model.
I don't know. All
right, so we're getting into Google territory now, Mike. But I just set up my Google Ads account following the video, and they push out the expert. They push out the
updated UI.
UI of the course, and I can't find the expert mode. I need expert mode.
Yeah, someone else mentioned this. This will be in the updates we do. I think just send us a screenshot inside your private chat, and I'll help you out. But I think now you don't have to go to expert mode. I think you're automatically in it. I think they did away with the other way, but.
Yeah.
Oh, he found it on the call. Someone, Greg helped him. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah,
Greg. I love how we make things happen here.
You know what, though? Guys, even though failure teaches you a lot, buying a course from legit sources like yours really is a shortcut through a lot of the small mistakes that you can make at first. That's the only reason why I bought it. Some guy you interviewed talked about how he bought the most expensive option with you guys just because he knew it was a way not to make those mistakes. That's a very true statement.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between, like, learning something from a course as far as this is what you have to do. But a course is also great in that it shows you all the little things as well, right? So if someone says, like, make a website, someone can give you really, really valuable information, but they skip through all the little steps of, okay, how do I make this website? What theme do I use? What should it look like? Like, what are all these little things that you need to make it work? And that's just stuff that we had to learn the hard way. Those little things take a long time, but that's just something you can instantly say, hey, do this, do this, do this. And now they're, you know, off on a better footing.
What's the difference between having content? Oh, Parnik says, yo, guys, it's been a while. Levi says, not plated, actual gold names. Well, I have to actually see what it is.
Like a chain?
I don't know. Yeah, I feel like I got to see what it is before I can identify like how people would search it.
I think it's almost time for me to buy the bow chain. The iced out bow chain.
That'd be pretty sick.
Thanks. I'm gonna start reading, Joe.
All right. This robe is getting uncomfortable.
What's the difference between having content from our store or having it on a content SEO only site? And then redirecting it from there.
Well, you should probably just have it all on your main site.
Yeah, I mean, he may have. We've done it both ways.
Yeah, I feel like when we've done off content, sorry, off site content in this example, I feel like I did it at a time when I only knew like one way, like. To do SEO, and that was with WordPress. I didn't understand like how it translated to like different things, if that makes sense. Like how you can follow the same principles on any platform. I guess I didn't Shopify. Fully understand that. So I would just keep it all on Shopify.
Cool. Levi says, when you say search keyword intent, do you mean just typing in Google words, I believe, related to product and see what comes up? I'm saying if you have evidence or if you have like just any knowledge of like how people find or look for that particular product, are they searching gold names? Like I still literally don't know what this is that you're talking about. So if someone's searching by gold names and Google actually recognizes what that is, what a gold name is, then I mean, that's pretty, that's intent. They have intent to buy that thing that you're selling. So
yeah, again, I feel like
overall, I probably wouldn't recommend what you're doing. To be fair, you're better off just sticking with what we teach. But
well, I feel like I would want to see
if it's your thing, it's worth trying.
I would want to see what it is. I don't know exactly what he's talking about. I think it'd be valuable to see what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Greg's not our VA. He's just another man in the chat, like you. That we appreciate helping people out. But Greg asks, have you guys attempted a fitness equipment niche? What is your experience like? I mean, yeah, there's plenty of I saw you said in a previous one you're struggling to make sales in it. There's I know people that do it. We've had some experience with it ourselves. There's a million ways to make it work. It just probably comes down to you have bad suppliers, or I mean, it comes down to a million things. I don't know if you're in our course, but your website could be screwed up. Your ads could be screwed up. That's probably the most likely thing. Your suppliers could be not the best. So it's like you have to dive in. You have to do a full-scale audit of where things are going wrong for you. But, I mean, I know for a fact there's – I can name like five people off the top of my head that are doing well in that sort of space. So, yeah. If you're not in the course, I would recommend – at least getting in so you could talk with us. You could share your website. We can get more deep on it. So that's my sales pitch for the day. Anything else, Joe?
No, that's about it. I guess we'll call it here.
Yeah, I think it was almost an hour. Good enough. But yeah, hopefully next time we'll have Luther Landreau on the show and we'll talk about some things. But I hope people enjoyed this one, because I always like going down memory lane with this stuff, especially around this time, Joe. This is like November is the birthing period for a lot of our greatest ideas.
What about this time period? Like, what is it? What's so?
I'm saying we've come up with a lot of things during this time of year.
Do we?
Yeah. Oh, you were just talking about how, whatever.
We
watched those Luther videos. It was like Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
5 or 6 years ago. And now look at us.
Yeah, now this you Thanksgiving, know? There's other things that may or may not happen.
Yeah.
But we can't reveal those.
Might sacrifice Jared.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you guys for coming. If you want to learn more about stuff that actually works, how you can build your own online business portfolio, go to buildassetsonline.com/playbook. Watch our free course. And as always, take it easy.
Thanks for listening to the Build Assets Online podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget, subscribe, share, and leave us a rating on whatever platform you might be listening from. And if you're ready to learn how to build your own online business portfolio, start now by visiting buildassetsonline.com/playbook. We'll see you in the next episode.